This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I am Benjamin.
And it is 4 days after Valentine's Day. And normally, being single, I don't really give a shit about that holiday. But it is fun to think back to the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Nice.
You know, it's a true crime brain. That's what I think of. I don't think of lovey-dovey chocolate shit. I think of massacres.
I think of all the people that wronged me and massacres.
Well, that could probably go hand in hand in some cases. but before we jump into the actual massacre, you kind of understand the players, and the most predominant one, get my gum out so I'm not chomping in everybody's ear, was Al Capone. And I think everybody knows who Al Capone is. Okay, here's a question. What do you think of when somebody says mob people? Like, what pops into your mind?
Is this for me or for everyone?
That would be for you. And anyone, if you want to chime in.
When I hear mob people, I think of movies mostly. It like pops up like The Godfather.
But from a psychological standpoint, though.
I mean, like, in what regard? Do you want me to say if I feel like these people are like born deviant?
Okay, see, you know how we say that not all, but a lot of CEOs are sociopaths, right?
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I think of mob people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you look at a prison population, not all, but some of them are sociopaths, right? Like, right. So that extends to every population of people. So I think they're just like any other population of people. They just have had environments that have led them to be in the positions they're in.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually, I'll play something here in a little while that I have a friend who was a friend of a mob boss from New York. Obviously for safety and privacy reasons, I'm not going to tell you who she is, and I'm not going to tell you who the mob boss is, because, you know, it's easy to put two and two together. So we'll just, not that anything would ever happen, but just want to make sure
yes.
He stays safe.
And I actually have more thoughts on all of it as well. I just didn't want to go into speaking about stuff that I know that people haven't heard yet. So we'll get to that when we get to that.
All right. So I want to talk about Al Capone because he's the big player in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Now, Alphonse Capone.
I had no idea that it wasn't like Albert or something.
Well, you got to keep, he's an Italian immigrant. So that.
Yeah. Alphonse.
I guess it's pronounced Alphonse. I don't know if there's like an Italian way to pronounce it, but I don't know. But Alphonse Capone was born in 1899. He was born in Brooklyn, New York. He was the son of recent Italian immigrants, Gabriel and Teresina Capone. Gabriel, I guess, right? For guys, Gabriel, yeah.
I mean, is that the mom or is that the dad?
Well, Teresina would be Gabrielle. Teresina would be the mom because it ends in an A.
Okay. I didn't know that was a rule, but I'll believe you.
Well, I think Italian's close to Spanish, and Spanish, when they end in A, that's feminine.
That makes sense, because the first name that popped in my head is Paula, right? Which is, I mean, it's obviously used in all cultures, but there are a lot of Hispanic people named Paula, and that ends in an A.
Right.
And Manuela and those types of,
Oh, gosh. They were poor. They, of course, came to America like all immigrants seeking a better life. They had 8 kids. They lived in typical immigrant lifestyle. They lived in a New York tenement. Al's dad was a barber, his mom was a seamstress, and there isn't anything in Capone's childhood or family life that would predict him becoming so infamous as, America's most notorious gangster. So there's, no abuse or anything like that that we know of for him to.
Do we know his position in his childbirth, the like childbirth order? Is he somewhere in the middle?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know if I read
I'm
that
just curious
somewhere.
because obviously he would be the most notorious person from that family, right? He was so it would be interesting if he was like just a random middle child, right? Not
I don't know. I don't
that middle children are random and that you can't do great things. I just mean that like people always talk about like the oldest child and being like the dominant one that kind of like sets the path for mom and dad, how they raise children. And then the baby gets everything. And then the middle children are just kind of stuck in the middle and they're like F everyone, right? Like, so it'd be
My
interesting.
sister's a middle child. She'll claw your eyes out.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's really no like background. I don't know where he falls in the scheme of children. No background as to why he would become a killer, because he did kill people. I mean, it's, he did. He was never convicted
Yeah,
of
but I
it, but
mean, as opposed to talking about like a Jeffrey Dahmer and you say no
what?
telling why
No,
he was going to kill people. We
he
know why
wasn't
Al Capone went out to
serial
kill people.
killer.
If to
He was a
protect.
mass murderer.
Yeah, but I mean, Al Capone went. We know why he went out to kill people. We don't know why he got into a life of crime necessarily, but we know that he's killing people
We'll get into that.
to protect his financials and life of crime, right?
Yeah.
It's
So
not like a joy. Well, it might be, but like,
I
probably.
you don't know. He could have enjoyed it. He enjoyed the power.
Yeah.
He was actually a good student in his Brooklyn elementary school, but he started to fall behind and he had to repeat sixth grade. And
Yeah.
it was actually around that time that he started playing hooky and he was hanging out at the Brooklyn docks. And one day his teacher hit him for insolence and he struck the teacher back. Principal gave him a beating and Capone never returned back to school after that. So he was
Like
like, F this.
amazing what teachers could get away with, right? So yes,
Right.
clearly Al Capone should not strike his teacher. However, nowadays, obviously, the teacher couldn't have struck you first, and then you wouldn't be given a beating. But I mean, it's like he gets
Well,
hit and he gets beaten.
yeah, I mean, there were no beatings in school, but I remember
The
in
paddle.
elementary school, we used to get paddled.
Yeah, we had
They
paddle. I never got it,
could
but
paddle
I lived
people.
in terror of it, right?
I don't know about in terror, because they didn't
It was
hit
always
you
the same
hard, I
bad
guess.
kids, right?
Huh?
It was always the same bad kids.
Usually,
Like,
yeah, but you know what?
I hope he doesn't find me and come kill me, but you can just tell he's bad from his name. There was this kid in grade school named Butchie, and Butchie always got
My
it.
great uncle's name was Butch.
Yep, he probably got paddled.
He probably did, actually. Yeah, it much different times today. I think kids should have their asses beat every once in a while. Maybe
Yeah, I don't
they'd
know
straighten
about a
up a little bit.
paddle, but yeah, no, I don't think that teachers should be allowed to beat kids. I was trying to think of a circumstance where it was good. I do think parents should be allowed to discipline kids and that it's not
Yes.
abuse until it
Yes.
hits a certain line and the parent needs to know when to stop. But as far as, yeah, people that aren't related to the children shouldn't touch them.
Don't know. There have been some kids I'd like to beat the hell out of, but I
Yeah,
don't.
you give them
So.
to the parents, and hopefully the parents are good and they beat them for you. Like, look, this one needs a beating. I'm giving them back to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so he never went back to school, and during this time, the Capones had moved out of the tenement to a better home on the outskirts of the Park Slope neighborhood of Brooklyn. I don't know anything about Brooklyn, so I don't know. I guess that's more middle class, something like that. I don't know. But it was here that that Al would actually meet his future wife and also his mob mentor. Racketeer Johnny Torrio. Torrio's notorious. So Torrio was running a numbers and gambling operation near Capone's home when Capone began, running small errands for him to keep. This is like sixth, seventh grader, this doing this.
Yeah.
So He got
I mean,
initiated
like
early.
I mean, I want I speak like an expert. In movies, I mean, that's how it always starts, right? You're like a
Yeah.
young kid, and it's like, hey, kid, just run this down to the local butcher and give him this
Yeah.
package. It's like,
Yeah,
all
exactly.
right.
Exactly. So
Okay.
1909, Johnny Torrio actually left Brooklyn. He went to Chicago. But they actually stayed close. And early on, Capone stuck to legitimate employment. He was working in a munitions factory as a paper cutter. He did spend some time among the street gangs in Brooklyn, but aside from occasional scrapes, his gang activities were mostly uneventful. In 1917, Torrio introduced Capone to the gangster Frankie Yale, who employed Capone as bartender and a bouncer at the Harvard Inn in Coney Island.
So
And
weird that
what?
like the dude's name is Frankie Yale
Yeah.
and
Harvard
Capone
Inn.
then gets a job from him as a bouncer at the Harvard Inn. It's like all these Ivy League school names crunched together from different
Well,
sources.
it sounds sophisticated, so but it was this place that Al got his name, the nickname of Scarface. Because one night he made an indecent remark to a woman at the bar. Her brother happened to be there and heard it, so he punched Capone, then he slashed him across his face, leaving three scars that inspired his nickname, which I didn't realize there were three. I've always noticed like that big long one that kind of like runs down the side of his face, that's one
Yeah.
I've seen. I didn't realize there were three of them. I guess I
That's
didn't like pay
sad
that
because
much
he's still
attention.
young at this point, and you
Yeah.
do want to kind of assume these people are like environmentally pressured into these bad lives, but it's like he's still young. I mean, he's hanging out with mobsters, so maybe he's already changed, but it's like you want him to get cut and like he's protecting somebody, or it's just a random fight. It's like, no, he said an obscene remark to a woman. He probably deserved to get cut.
Well, yeah, not good to do that right in front of the sister's brother. So
Yeah.
that's kind of dumb on his part. Now, when he was 19, he married Mae Coughlin, just weeks after the birth of their first kid, Albert Francis. Now, his former boss and his friend Johnny Torrio was the boy's godfather. That's how close these two were. So now he's a husband and he's a daddy. He wanted to do right by his family, so he moved to Baltimore, where he took an honest job as a bookkeeper for a construction company. But when his father died of a heart attack in 1920, Torrio invited him to come to Chicago. And of course, being so close, he jumped at the opportunity. So now in Chicago, Torrio was presiding over booming business and gambling and prostitution, but the enactment in 1920 of the 18th Amendment, which, as we all know, was prohibition, barred the sale and consumption of alcohol. This is when bootlegging came in, and this is like all the mobsters in fucking everywhere, not just Chicago, jumped on this. I mean, this is what we talk about. A big part of my tour when I do Mackey's is the mob and the bootlegging that went on during this time, because it was just ran rampant. So of
Yeah.
course, you're going to have total mob crime family wars over
I
shit like this.
wonder if the mobs didn't exist, if like the government would actually have been able to successfully eradicate alcohol from society.
There's no way. There's no way.
You
Too
think
many
even without
people.
mobs, it would have not happened?
I think even without mobs, I think the people would have really.
You still have little old Kentuckians making moonshine.
Yeah, they still would have been making their moonshine and stuff like that, but I think that, no pun intended, I think a mob mentality would have crept in and been able to eventually overturn it. Because I mean,
Yeah.
shit, alcohol was huge
Right. It's
back then.
just
Like, I mean, just like it is
sad
now.
because I mean obviously like marijuana has been becoming legal in more and more
Yeah.
states, but it's still illegal in some, and it's like it's way better for you than alcohol.
I was watching a documentary, and I agree with you on that. I don't think I used to have a problem with marijuana because I don't think anybody should just take a recreational drug just for the sake of getting high.
Yeah,
But
just
it
getting the
does
stuff
have
done.
medicinal purposes. But I saw in a video, I don't even remember what it was, but they were talking about how marijuana could actually bring out schizophrenic symptoms.
Like make them worse
Like make
or
them like if they were dormant bring them out. I don't know how true that is, but I mean it. I don't know. I don't know,
I
but
mean,
I
I
mean.
think there's definitely side effects to everything that you could do. So, I mean, I could see that being true. I'm not aware of that, but I could see that being true. And you know, we were talking recently in a class about biobases, about how alcohol, like the benefits, you know, other than like a small amount for like hearts and stuff, it's like really has no positive benefit to your mood in any way whatsoever. I mean, it's like
Well,
a poison.
I don't know. I mean, I agree that it's not healthy for you. I will agree with that, but I'm a happy drinker. Like I get, so are you. You're Mr. Lovey-Dovey. Have to pick people up for some weird reason.
Yeah, but people don't like being picked up.
That's true. That's true. But you're happy when you do it. So
I'm happy. Everyone else will be miserable.
I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't understand the whole, the problem with the government and marijuana is that they think it still needs to be a Schedule I medication, which is so stupid because it doesn't need to be. Because
Yeah.
it's not, I don't believe it that it's addictive. I really don't. I think that maybe the feeling that you get from it might be a little bit just if it makes you feel euphoric.
Yeah, and I do think that it does tend to have if in excess, like a demotivational property, right? So, I mean, that's not good if you need to perform and accomplish things.
Yeah, I think what kind of makes you just chill, basically, right? But you know, it does have a lot of very good medicinal purposes. You know, it helps people with
Oh yeah,
epilepsy,
people that are in pain.
Parkinson's.
I mean, I think it can help with anxiety, depression issues.
It's absolutely, I'm very, very much for it. I mean, you know, medicinally, I'm very anti-drug. I really don't even drink that much. I think, well, when I Leslie and I rented the Airbnb a couple weeks ago, we drank. That was probably the first time, and I can't even remember the last time I had an alcoholic drink before that.
Yeah, I
But
don't remember my
yeah,
last
it's, you
meeting.
know, I don't have a problem with it. But okay, so get back to Capone. We always go off on these weird tangents all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I just thought it was interesting. Like, if the mob was able to single-handedly keep alcohol in the game,
I mean, they obviously had a huge
a huge impact. Yeah.
impact of it. Yeah, because they were the ones who kept the alcohol flowing in their taverns and everything. And, you know, but again, of course, it was mob ran, so not
Right.
people you want to cross. So Capone actually cleaned up his act when his family came from Brooklyn to Chicago, his wife and his son. Along with his mom, his younger brothers and sister, they all moved to Chicago, and Capone bought just a modest house in like a middle class South Side. It's a tongue twister. In 1923, when Chicago elected a reformist mayor who announced that he had planned to rid the city of corruption, Torrio and Capone moved their base beyond the city limits to suburban Cicero. But a 1924 mayoral election in Cicero threatened their operations. And to ensure they could continue doing business, Torrio and Capone initiated an intimidation effort on the day of the election, which was March 31st, 1924, to guarantee their candidate would get elected. And some of the voters were even shot and killed. Now, Chicago sent in police to respond, and they brutally gunned down Capone's brother Frank in the street. See, this is what I'm talking about. Like, when I think of mobs, this is what I think of, you know, the intimidation factor. They don't like what you're doing. So, okay, we're going to knock you off. That's what I think of. But
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thing, right? Like, killing voters is a real good way to
yeah, I
get
mean,
the
you
candidate
know,
elected. It's like, I just took out 20. We're going to win.
it's just, you know, in the video I'm about ready to play that, you know, my friend, she sheds a different perspective on mob life as more, well, you know, we'll talk about here in just a minute once we finish listening to the video. And, you know, it just gives a different perspective. And I will say that because I am keeping her anonymous, I did change her voice a little bit. And the clip that I'm playing you is it's several clips that are put together because the full interview was like 40 minutes, and for time restraints, I didn't want to play the whole episode, so I took out the most vital pieces, I think, anyway. But I will put the whole episode up. Probably tomorrow is like a bonus episode if anybody's interested in just listening to the whole conversation about this strange friendship that she had with a crime mob boss, and he was, high up in the family. So it's very interesting. I hope you enjoy it. I want to get more of a better psychological profile of what a lot of these mobsters are kind of like, because I think they
Okay.
probably tend to have the same type of personality disorder. We'll just put it like that. I think they're all
Okay.
sociopaths personally, but that's just my own opinion.
You think they're what?
I think they're all sociopaths, just
Huh.
like most CEOs.
Well, CEOs for sure. No, I didn't get a sociopathic vibe. Like, and I don't think it's, I think because of the nature of what the mob is not, it's not, it's CEOs is a specific, it's not, CEOs don't come up because family connection, right? So you can't just like say everybody in the mob is a sociopath because it's you're in a family connection and you often don't have a choice. Some people do rise to the top, sure. But CEOs, I specifically think, yes, are sociopaths because of what it, not all of them, but
Well, yeah, that's what we say.
there's
Not
a
all
high
of them, but there's a
percentage.
lot of them that who are,
Yeah,
yeah.
but I think it's different. It's different in the mob world for the reason that it's just cultural. It's cult something's culturally taught. So it's not like a somebody's born with some sort of penchant for crime. It's a cultural thing that came out of a necessity. It came out
So
of
it's violence begets violence, basically. You're taught violence.
so that's how
Yes,
you act towards the
yes.
world. So
Well, it's more nature versus nurture.
yeah, and I don't think it's ta teaching violence so much. It's just it's a necessity. It was a necessity for certain people who were back in the day, came from immigrant culture who didn't have a lot have protection from police or have money or a leg up that really formed bonds between out of necessity, out of sheer need to survive in what this country was, especially back then. And so let me backtrack. So I had been watching Sopranos, and it had recently ended. I have to start with that.
Okay.
And I was and there was a gaping hole in my life because because everybody and who nobody liked the ending, let's be honest. And
Don't tell me because I've never seen it.
well, it wasn't popular. And I mean nothing was going to be popular because everybody wanted it to continue. And who obviously all the fans. But so it just so happened that I was in a supermarket in Los Angeles, and I had been dressed up for something in the middle of the day. So it was like oddly, weirdly dressed in like a black gown, and I was like in the Bengay aisle. I don't know what I was getting, but I was like, the medicinal aisle for something. And this older dude, he just sort of looks up to me. He's like, "Well, that's quite the fancy outfit for the supermarket at noon." And then I was like, "Oh yeah, I have a thing, blah blah blah," and sort of brushed him off. And he goes, "Oh well, yeah, are you Italian? You look Italian or something." And I was like, "Oh, part, I've got some, sure." And he's like, "Oh, I thought so, I thought so." I'm like, "Cool. You live around here?" Like, just had that kind of shooting the shit conversation. And he's an older man. My mom told me to be nice to older people when I was like, okay. And I was in my 20s at the time. And he's like, "I just moved into the neighborhood. I don't know very many people here." And I was like, "Oh, cool. Where are you from?" And, "Oh, I'm from New York." And, "Oh, cool. And what do you do?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm actually dressed up for, an interview because I'm an actor." And he's like, "Oh, I acted once." And I said, "Oh, okay, cool. Good for you, buddy. If you act once, usually I think like you probably did a bit part in something or you were in your school play. I mean, it doesn't sound like a profession, so And he's like, yeah, I was in a movie. I'm like, oh, cool. Thinking probably didn't have any lines. And then he's like, I couldn't keep going with it, though. I couldn't memorize all those lines. How many lines do you have? And he's like, oh, I was the lead of the film. And I was like, huh, okay. Like, someone made a film about you. And then I'm thinking, ah, it's probably some, what is, cousin pulled out a video camera and they made something in their garage. I don't know. And he's like, yeah, you can look it up online. It's this and this. It was made, and then he started naming some names that I was like, oh, it sounds like a real film. This guy's full of shit. How do you do one film? One, like, and be the lead of it, and you're like 80 something. I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. So he's like, I'll tell you about it sometime. We should get together. And I was like, okay. Well, he's like, well, I don't know anybody. I got a lot of friends, and you said you're Italian. Like, I'm very slightly Italian, but he's like, do you speak Italian? I'm like, oh yeah, well, I tried to practice once. And he's like, well, come over, we'll practice Italian. I'm like, okay, like how fine, sure. And I gave him my number, I don't know. And he's like, we have barbecues sometimes at my house. I have some family here, you'll come. I'm like, okay, sounds good. I leave. And so he ran some errands, went home, and of course, like, it's something. Something else he said. He said something else I didn't pick up on at the time. I was like, well, where are you from? He's like, well, originally from New York, but then I've been away for a while, and then now I'm here. And I'm like, what in the like? It just did not dawn on me, the being away for a while thing. And I was like, cool, okay. I thought maybe he was living in South America. I don't know what away was. I went home, and my then boyfriend. I Googled it. Oh,
I
so I
think
go
he
home.
called you or something.
So no, we exchanged numbers. I went home, and of course, it stuck with me. Like, who is this guy? So I. Like, what is this film? Is he full of shit or what? So I Google it, and sure enough, he was not full of shit. Everything he said was true. And he'd done a film where he starred in it, and it was about like kind of a mob life. So he was just starring in kind of as himself, but it was a fake story, but he was just being himself. And so he was a lead of a big film. It was backed by some pretty big people. And that's when I realized who he was. And he was a head of he was a cop of a crime family. And he'd just recently been released from pretty intense high security prison for many, many years, most of his life. He had like one other outing, and then he was back in at some point. And
Did
my boyfriend at the time, my ex, sorry, his brother in law enforcement is a probations officer. And when I mentioned it to my ex, he's like, oh, let me just run it by my brother and let's just see like what those charges were and stuff. And by the way, this was a little while ago, so Google wasn't as information wasn't as readily accessible as it is now, so I didn't have all the information that you'd probably be able to get now. And he ran the name, and it literally came up on my brother's my ex's brother's computer as like whatever he said, it looks like he's never seen before, which is like red marks
Oh
that were
shit.
like no, cross, no, don't deal, run away. So he was like, he calls me immediately. He's like, lose the number, don't ever talk to this person again. This is not your friend. It scared the shit out of me. I was like, okay, grab a coffee and sit for a while and wait until my then boyfriend was off work or come pick me up or something. I'd be fine, figure it out. And I get like about an hour in, I am sort of getting a little bored, and this guy calls, and I looked at him, I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, hey, what's up? How are you? He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm just having a coffee by myself. And he's like, why? I'm like, because I was in the car with two friends. I never mind. And he's like, well, why don't I come pick you up? And I was like, well, why would you? He's like, I got nothing to do. And he's like, I'm an old man. What do I got to do? I got nothing to do. He's like playing his wife down, I'm like, oh, where are you? It's like, I over here. It was like 5 minutes away. And I was like, well, I guess you're kind of close by. Sure, why don't you come pick me up? I'll take a ride. And so he picks me up, and it's like a baller car, right? It's like a Phantom or something. I forget. No, it wasn't Phantom. It was just a really nice car. And I get it. And he's like, "Do you mind if we make a stop before we go take you home?" I'm like, "Sure, I'll run errands with you. What are we doing?" And he's like, "I just got, it's my friend's like restaurant opening in, and I just need to pop by and say congratulations for his for opening his new restaurant." I'm like, "I'm not really dressed for that." He's like, "Ah, you look fine." So we go to this big premiere, like one of those things of his best friends who was a billionaire.
Oh, nice.
And pretty famous dude. And I walk in, and it's pretty big to do, And there's like red carpet and stuff like that. I'm like, "Oh my God." I'm in jeans and a tank top. And I'm like, "Oh, hi. Yep. And then like I'm set as they see me at the table with the billionaire who's opening this restaurant and a bunch of like Hollywood agents, which I thought was really funny. And this other woman sitting next to me, just, and then my friend. And then I start chatting up with the lady next to me, and we hit it off just fine. Actually got along really well, and had a few drinks, laughing. After like 2 hours, like, "Oh well, I gotta go back. But we should like exchange numbers and like tell." I feel like I should call this guy something else, like David. I'm gonna call him David. Tell David that we give him, give me your number, and like I feel like we could do business together. I'm like, "Business, all right, sure." And then the billionaire got up. He's like, "Oh, I'm gonna take I'll take you to the car. You can use my plane like to get home." I'm like, "Oh God, these fancy people." And so I guess she was gonna go home to where she lives. And I was like, "Oh, these people are really nice, And I turned to my friend, let's call him David. David, and David's like, "Wow, you and she got along really well." And I said, "Yeah, apparently we're like, she's got some plans for us to do business." And so without revealing that name either, it turns out that she's like kind of the world's most famous madame. Take him out to dinner with my brother, and we're sort of like hung out and just talked about stories. And yes, I did want to know, but like more about his life because I wanted to dig in. And we'd get to have some frank conversations, though he would not be cl never say anything very clearly about, like, I wouldn't be like, "How many people you kill?" or something like that. Like, I would never ask some
I would
disrespectful
have.
thing. Like, well, I wasn't. It was more. It's not about that, and it's not about a number. And I don't even know if he has or hasn't whatever he's done. I won't say that I know anything. However, I would say I did point blank just ask him. I say, "Hey, if we're gonna hang out, I don't need you to do me any favors. I don't want to be a part of whatever you do. I'm just here as a peripheral friend,
Was
and
he
you need to
still
promise me."
in with the crime family?
I don't think you ever get up. I mean, I don't know how you,
But I mean,
I don't know how you.
like actively involved, like you would have
I don't
been.
know. I don't know. I think that the position that he had was still the position, but it's not. It's not, you don't have a badge, you don't wear a name tag. I don't think it
You're
goes
thinking
away.
it's like higher up type.
The top, the
Okay.
highest. But we talked about like when he went away and why and the things that led up to that in that kind of vague way. And he'd say, at the time there was no law enforcement that was protecting us and our families. There wasn't, and we had to protect ourselves the same way you do your what you just said. Like, I'm protected in my house. No one can come in because I got all. They felt that way. They armed themselves, and they protected themselves. The streets were really rough, and they had to. And then people would try and come in, and knew, and it was very culturally based in those days because there were so many different immigrant groups, and immigrant groups kind of like had to.
You said this was in New York, right?
But he was just, really described a different life of like, it was like a war. He felt like more of a soldier in a war. And so I don't, when you say like people in mob or mafia are like sociopaths, I'm like, that would be like saying soldiers are sociopaths. People, when you go to, for instance, right now, if you are, in Afghanistan or something, or if you're like fighting and you have to protect your family and from whatever other force or other people that are coming, I don't think it's sociopathic. I think some people that are in even these Al-Qaeda situations that are just having to survive. And it was really clear that that's how he felt about it. Hypothetically, because everything was hypothetical. Hypothetically, if you had to kill somebody, what? How do you not have regret for that? What I would hypothetically ask. If somebody like you would have had to do that, it was always very like, there's never any admitting. Because also, he doesn't know. I'm going to be wearing a wire for all these fucking months. And he'd say, hypothetically, you know, if anything like that were to happen in, you know, especially back in the day, it would be to protect. It would always be because there was a threat.
But he never felt remorse for actions like that.
He would just say in the same way. I mean, I think maybe there's something there, but in the same way that it is justified, it as a soldier would feel remorse. Like, it sucks that it has to happen, but this was a war. It was a war on the streets.
Okay, so that was my friend, and you got a sneak peek into the full interview, which, like I said, I'll probably play tomorrow. I mean, what did you think? She humanized the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And there's several thoughts I have. One is that your friend really did not heed the advice of friends when they said, don't respond. It's like, oh, I'm bored. Let me go for this ride.
In her defense, he contacted her.
Yes.
She just answered.
He had to answer the phone. And it was immediately after someone said, don't talk to this person ever. So that should have been planted on her brain. But she was young and was like, I do what I want. But anyways, I mean, I feel like I kind of would have probably done the same thing because the man's like 80 something, right? And look, if someone's a villain, you're safer being their friend than not.
That's kind of my thoughts too. And my true crime obsessed brain would be like, I'm going to grill this motherfucker as much as I can to find out what mob life is really like.
Yeah.
She doesn't think that way. However, I do. I don't care if it's disrespectful. Yeah, I want to know.
Get pieces just naturally. But yeah, no, I agree with her on a lot of regards. I think that environment plays the biggest role, right? Because these people are, number one, they're in poverty, right? And number two, they're not being protected by the police the way they should be, right? So they have to find ways to, number one, protect their families and friends, and the best way to do that is to be a compact unit, right? So that's why, like, a lot of times people call the mob like the family, right? Because they become a family, right? And they protect each other. But then I do think that power is extremely, for everyone, not just mob people, psychologically addictive. And I think that when you get a structure like that, being the top of the family becomes everyone's goal, or at least their hidden down inside goal, right? I don't think like Al Capone was like running errands and like, damn, this is awesome, I'm going to take this shit over. But I think in the back of his mind,
I bet he did.
Man, it would be really cool to be that guy, right? And then eventually he was that guy.
Yeah.
But that said, I do think that, like, just like it was talking about prison population, the same as just the general world population, there's sociopaths everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And in the mob, there's sociopaths. And Al Capone very well could have been someone who's like, I love killing people. I love manipulating people. I loved it. And I'm not saying he was. I don't know. He might have been someone that was there because of circumstance. Mm-hmm. But he also might have been someone that had that in, because it would be very easy to hide as a sociopath in a system that's built to do things that sociopaths would do just for survival, right? Yeah. I mean, it'd be very easy to be a criminal in a criminal system. Do you know what I'm saying? Right?
Like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like how she was talking about it, that he didn't, for him, it was a necessity in order to be able to protect his family and the people he loved. It was as she described it, as, you know, our soldiers who are going off to war to protect our freedoms. You know, it basically, you can't call them sociopaths because it's something that they have to do, that, you know, they're ordered,
they're protecting
to do so.
Their nation. Yeah. Right. I mean, they're looking at it as a patriotism, not sociopath.
Yeah, and you also got to factor into it the timeline, because this was in the 50s and 60s in New York. And, you know, we like to think that we're more evolved, but I mean, honestly, we're not. You know, immigrants and everything, especially back then, were treated like shit. I mean, they didn't have protection from the police, or the police did not protect them. They weren't there to help them out in any way, you know. And I mean, I think times have gotten a little bit better, but you know, let's face it, our country is still still a lot of hate going on.
Yeah, there is,
So
but if you think about like mobs, right? Like the majority were like Italian immigrants, and I would say they're like idolized now.
well, they're very romanticized
Yes.
from the movies, you know, like the Godfather movies.
But even like characters like Rocky Balboa, although he kind of was friends with a mobster in the first Rocky
Well,
and
well, yeah. Okay,
I
we're
mean,
talking
I
about
grew up
Rocky.
wanting to be Italian.
Oh, God.
I just thought Italian people were cool. I think that's the way society views them now.
Oh, Jim Palab. Well, I don't know if I should say his last name. Jim P.
He's going to
from.
listen to this and be like, "Yes, I knew Ben always envied me."
Oh gosh, he is like this is the guy we used to work with back in the airlines. He is the epitome of Italian.
Yeah.
He would always brag about how big his package was, though. I was just like, shut up,
Oh Lord,
whatever. I
you might have
know.
said too much of his last name to be going there.
Oh
He's
please, like he didn't broadcast it to everybody who would listen anyway.
"Thank you for letting the world know."
That, you know, hey, if it's true, that's like, I guess, a source of pride for guys, you know, bunch of weirdos.
I don't know. It's a pride I wouldn't know anything about.
Way to knock yourself down there, Ben.
It's all good. The world knocked me down 20
Oh
years
my
ago.
God. Oh shit. So, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope that people will actually listen to the full interview, because she's, you know, like I said, she just put a human face on somebody I would automatically consider to be a sociopath. Just, you know, and again, that's just how our public perception is of mobsters because of the movies and things that we hear. And whether Al Capone was a psychopath or a sociopath or anything, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've
You know where I
heard.
think you would have to be a mob sociopath? Because there's a lot of roles in the mob. And I think if you're close enough in the knit, right? Like you can kind of like pick your position the same way you would like applying for a job in like regular society. So to me, it's like we're the hitmen, right? We're the guys, the leg breakers, the knuckle breakers. Like those guys might have been serial killers who just happened to find the right place to be.
Well, okay, let's talk about, here's a good example. Richard Kuklinski, they called him the Iceman. He is a sociopath or a psychopath, or possibly both. I don't know if you can be both or not, but yeah, he had, I think he killed over 100 people in a multitude of different ways, you know, including chopping up bodies and things like that. And I watched, we'll do an episode on him because he's fascinating too, but I watched some of his interviews and he just doesn't give a shit. He was
Yeah.
perfectly, he felt nothing taking these people out. So yeah, he. Hitman profile definitely suits him, because there's no way he does not have some kind of
Right. I mean, I
sociopathy.
think the, but then again, there is the circumstance where you're a young kid and you just want your foot in the door and they're like, "What if you do this for me?" And it's something horrible like that, and you're like, "I really need this because otherwise I have nothing and I'm not safe in this community." You know, I mean, there is a way to fall into that role.
But killing over 100 people, that goes a little bit beyond necessity. That's
Well, I
because
mean,
you
like,
want to
see,
do it.
when I say fall into the role, I mean on your first time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can
And then
understand that.
maybe you just kind of realize you're good at it. And then I think to kill 100, you probably start to like it.
Yeah, I
So
mean,
maybe there's a progression. Maybe you didn't start out that way.
I don't know. I mean, it could just be he says he doesn't care one way or another, you know, which kind of leads me to believe that there is some kind of sociopathy there, just because there's no empathy.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a serial killer because he doesn't have that compulsion to kill. It's a job for him.
It's just a thing.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have emotion when he does it. It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, so I would say that was more of a circumstantial. That's the role he just happened to fall into and he was comfortable doing it. Right.
Yeah.
But there has to be a certain amount of sociopathy just to have no empathy, right? When you're hurting somebody.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there has to be plenty of those in the mob. They're just for the things that they do. I don't know. I get the whole soldier thing, protecting thing, you know, but then there's also a lot of wanting to have the ultimate power.
Right.
Which is what Capone wanted. And I mean, just, yeah. I mean, them trying to get the election to come out in their favor shows it right there that, you know, they wanted to be able to continue doing what they wanted to do without political influence. And they took care of it in their own way.
Yeah. And they're brave people too, though, because if you think about it, I mean, getting that ultimate power also makes you the biggest target, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll actually talk a little bit more about how that kind of became his downfall too. So after an attempt on his life in 1925 by rival mobsters, Torrio actually decided to leave the business and he went back to Italy and he turned the entire operation over to Capone. Al ignored his mentor's advice to maintain a low profile and instead he moved his headquarters to a plush suite in the Metropole Hotel in downtown Chicago. Now from there he began, you know, living a luxurious and public lifestyle. He was spending his money lavishly, but he always paid in cash because obviously he didn't want a trail. And the newspapers at the time estimated Capone's operations generated $100 million in revenue annually. This is in the 20s.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you said he always paid in cash because he wanted to lay low. It's like, and this is my ignorance, I'm asking for real. Did credit cards exist in the 20s? Like, was that even a thing? Or is cash the only option?
I don't know, but they had like different like gold notes and stuff like that.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think people use like, that you could trace,
that would have
I guess.
Your name on them, yeah.
Yeah, so something like that. And I'm assuming they had some
checks.
I think, you know, because I mean, the Templars were the first one to come up with credit.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, what, 1800s, early 1800s.
Oh, really?
So there had to be, I don't know if there was actually, because they didn't have the technology for actual credit cards. I don't yeah. not, but you know,
some
there had to be something.
Yeah. It's interesting.
The government always has a way to keep tabs on us. So, you know, there was
right.
something in play that way. So, but yeah, $100 million in the 1920s. That's insane. That's, you know, bootlegging, gambling, prostitution, dudes rolling it in. So the press, obviously, with him being so public, they followed his every move, and he was able to gain a lot of public sympathy for his gregarious and generous personality. Because, I mean, yeah, he killed people, okay, but he was also really generous with people. I mean, he would, you know, pay for shit for people who couldn't pay for things themselves, and he'd buy people a lot of stuff, a lot of, you know,
yeah.
nice things, and that.
It's
so he was very generous.
Like El Chapo in Mexico, right? He's in an
yeah.
American prison now, but like they love, like these people are like almost like saints to the community.
Yeah.
Because they do take care of their own, right? Like
yeah.
they're giving to everyone. And
yeah.
so you understand why people are like protesting and stuff when these people are in prison. Like these people are like their lifeblood.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much, you know, and.
And they're heroes. Because he's
yeah.
living this beautiful life, and it's the life that everyone there wants.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of the Robin Hood figure, or like an anti-prohibition resentment. You know, when that started to grow, a dissident who worked on the side of the people. But, you know, in later years, his name kind of, well, I mean, as we know it now, it increasingly became connected with, you know, the brutal violence. And, you know, once that started happening, his popularity obviously started to go down. So hey, media's controlling the narrative once again,
right?
Like it always seems to do,
right?
And
because you figure in his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
The violence always existed,
yeah,
but never probably an increasing degree. But the media can make it increasing degree whenever they feel like it, and make
well,
you hate it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of his fault too, because he had such a huge high profile. You know, he kind of, I think his ego really brought his downfall on himself, you know. But in 1926, when two of Capone's sworn enemies were spotted in Cicero, he ordered his men to gun him down. And unbeknownst to Capone, William McSwiggin, who was known as the hanging prosecutor, who had tried to prosecute him for a previous murder, was with the two marked men, and all three of them were killed. And, you know, I guess the
He's still
public at this
proud to.
time was fed up with Chicago's gang-dominated lawlessness. They wanted justice, which is actually funny because the same thing happened in the Covington, Wilder, you know, Newport, Cincinnati area too, when the Committee of 500 came through and ran out all of the illegal gaming operations. And for those of you who don't know, just a little side note, Cincinnati was actually the original Las Vegas. Cincinnati is called the original Sin City because Vegas started in my area. You know, it was one of the like I said, Bobby Mackey's a place I do tours. That was one of the places that had the illegal gaming going on. It was ran by the Cleveland Syndicate, which is part of the mob, a different part of the mob. And once they ran it out of that area, Bugsy Siegel is the one who kind of picked things up and took it to Vegas, and it is what it is now. Just a little fun side note for you there. So it wasn't happening just in Chicago. It was kind of a general thing all throughout the country for the most part, just in different times. This was a few years before what happened to ours in the Cincinnati area. But, you know, the problem was they didn't have any evidence for the murder. So they instead raided Capone's businesses where, you know, they gathered documentation that would later be used to bolster charges against him of income tax evasion. And in response, Capone called for a peace conference among the city's criminals, and an agreement was reached to stop the violence. That lasted about 2 months. So here's where the massacre comes into
It's
play.
just funny, like, just from because like you said, we all have this preconceived notion of what the mob is, and even after discussing how there's other circumstances or whatever, there's that societal preconceived notion. It's like Al Capone held a peace conference? What?
Hey, it lasted for 2 months.
Nobody died for 2 months.
Oh, like that we know of anyway. You never know.
We just hit it better for 2 months.
Yes, exactly. So the massacre, this is where this comes into play. So Chicago's gang war reached its bloody climax in the so-called St. Valentine's Day Massacre of 1929. One of Capone's longtime enemies, he was an Irish gangster, George Bugs Moran. Everybody's heard of Bugs Moran. He ran his bootlegging operations out of a garage at 2122 North Clark Street, again in Chicago. On February 14th, seven members of Moran's operations were gunned down while standing lined up facing this brick wall of the garage. There were like 70 rounds of ammunition were fired, and when police officers from Chicago's 36th district arrived, they found one gang member, Frank Guzenberg. He was barely alive. And just in the few minutes before he died, they were really trying to get him to reveal what had happened, but Guzenberg wouldn't talk because there's that whole, you know, even though the
Snitches
two
get
gangs
stitches.
hated each other, it's just like, you know, they want to handle their own justice. So they're not going to help the police whatsoever finding out. Because you know, obviously they knew who did it. They knew it was Capone's gang who did it. And I guess they wanted to seek their vengeance themselves as opposed to allowing the police to, you know, put him in jail, that type of thing. And, you know, the cops could only find a few eyewitnesses, but they eventually concluded that gunmen dressed as police officers had entered the garage and pretended to be arresting the men. But Moran and the others immediately blamed the massacre on Capone's gang. You know, he claimed, Bugs, that is, he claimed to have been at his home in Florida at the time. So no one was ever brought to trial for the murders. And it to this day still remains one of the biggest unsolved crimes in history. And if you go to the Mob Museum in Chicago, you can actually see the original wall that this happened on. I don't remember who actually bought like all the pieces of the bricks, but they put it back together, and you can still see like the bullet holes and everything that are riddled in this brick wall. It's also supposed to be haunted, but I haven't been there, so I don't know. Now, though the St. Valentine's Day Massacre kind of marked the end of any significant gang opposition to Capone's rule in Chicago, so it made him the man in charge, it, you know, can also be said to have kind of marked the beginning of his downfall, you know, because like what we were talking about a minute ago about ultimate power can ultimately ruin you pretty much. He's got a highly effective organization, his impressive income, and his willingness to ruthlessly eliminate his rivals. Capone had become the country's most notorious gangster. The newspapers dubbed him public enemy number one. We've all heard that of Al Capone. And the feds began investigating Capone after he failed to appear before a federal grand jury after being subpoenaed in March of 29. And when he finally appeared and testified, federal agents arrested him for contempt of court for not showing up the first time. And Capone posted a bond. He was released, but he was arrested in Philadelphia that May on charges of carrying concealed weapons. And he served 9 months in prison for that, and he was released for good behavior, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's also interesting. I mean, I get it that, like, if you don't have him on certain crimes, you have to offer a bond. But it's like, posting bond for a guy that in the 20s has $100 million
is
pointless.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, oh, yeah, I paid before I got in here.
They can't get him for any of the real bad things. So they're like, hey, we'll just get him off the streets for a few months at least. Like
earlier you were saying, he killed three people, including a federal prosecutor.
Yeah.
And they tried to go after him for tax evasion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. Now, in February of 1931, a federal court found Capone guilty on the contempt charge, and they sentenced him to 6 months in Cook County Jail. Meanwhile, the U.S. Treasury Department had launched an investigation of Capone for income tax evasion, which is weird because I thought that was is the IRS part of the U.S. Treasury Department? I don't even know.
I
thought it was the IRS who did the investigating and things like that.
I mean, I would assume they're connected.
Yeah, I guess they would have to be. Because I know that, like, okay, well, like,
I would assume that the IRS is a branch of the Treasury Department.
Yeah, it may be. I'm horrible with that kind of stuff. Now, Special Agent Frank Wilson, who was a forensic accounting for the intelligence unit of the IRS, he and some of his team were able to put together a case, and in June 1931, Capone was indicted for evasion of federal income tax. He was convicted that October after a highly publicized trial. I'm talking like worldwide. This trial was, I mean, everybody knew about it all over the place. And he was sentenced to 11 years in prison. First, he started in Atlanta, and then later he was actually sent to Alcatraz. I visited his cell in Alcatraz.
I did as well.
It's so weird to think he was there. And I'm not sure why he was sent there, because Alcatraz is supposed to be for like the worst of the worst, or people who have broken out of other
tax evasion. Now, we get that he was like the worst of the worst, but they didn't have proof of any of that.
Mm-mm.
He wasn't in there for that.
Which is why I can't figure out how he was sent to Alcatraz. Because, I mean, it's also people were also sent there who had broken out of other prisons. So I don't know if they were concerned his gang busting him out.
Yes, I was going to say, they probably thought he had the means to get out. He's got infinite money. He's got infinite, like, support. And he's basically got an army that's waiting to get him out.
Or they could just be using that as an excuse to punish him, because Alcatraz was fucking some harsh living. Yeah.
Well, and you saw the cells. Those were super tiny.
Yeah.
Like, there's no life in those.
And cold, you know, because
it's
in the bay. It's in the middle of an island in the bay. And
you know what?
It's California, but it does get cold.
Yeah. And you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen pictures of Alcatraz, but I'm 20 minutes from there. I'll make a trip to Alcatraz soon and get some videos up and show you Al Capone's cell and all that. But what it comes to my mind with is, like, if you think about, like, movies where it's like throw them in the dungeon, like at an old castle, like Alcatraz looks like the dungeon in an old castle.
Yeah, pretty much all of it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the place because it's such an amazing history, but God, I can't even imagine living there. It would,
yeah,
it would be horrible, horrible, horrible.
When I don't think Capone was there, but I remember their story about like when there was a prison break attempt, right? And then
oh, Frank
like
and those two brothers
all over, and like it's just like there's so much history. It has to be super haunted in there.
Oh, it's supposed to be, yeah. And I would love, God, I'd love to be able to get there and investigate sometime. We need to hurry up and get famous so we can, you know, pull strings like that.
Yeah, but I don't know if those strings exist because I've never seen anyone do like anything on Netflix or Hulu or like about being an Alcatraz. Have you?
I think I want to say Taps and Ghost Adventures have both investigated.
Oh, have
it.
They? Okay.
Well, hell, Taps was able to get into the freaking Air Force Museum here, which is
man.
On a U.S. Air Force base. They let them do an investigation. Jerks. I've been trying to get there forever. But let's see. He was actually released from Alcatraz in 1939, and he died, from what I understand, as an invalid recluse at his Florida home in 1947. So, all in all, I mean, minus the 11 years in prison and, you know, the end part of his life, dude had an amazing life.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, whether or not he was a sociopath, I don't know. Or just power driven, or I don't know.
Yeah, did he stay with his wife the whole time?
Was I his think so. I don't think there? They ever got. I don't think they ever got divorced.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had like a normal life other than being this guy.
I wouldn't say normal life. I'd say he had like
yeah,
celebrity
I think
type
he had
life.
A good
you know.
Life.
Yeah.
He ate well.
He
that.
Did.
He ate well.
He did, and he was never short of women.
Cars.
Yeah.
Protection. Buy anything he
lots
wanted.
Of power.
So, as far as a worldly life, he had a very worldly life.
Yes. Yeah. He's. I could, you know, minus killing people, I could totally live that way, I guess, you know. Can you imagine me head of a crime family?
Yes.
I could too, actually. I don't
I mean,
know why I'm laughing.
I would hope that I'd be smart enough to lay low, but I think that's too much money, too much power. You just can't do it.
Oh man, not me. I would buy a farm somewhere in the middle of nowhere and not see anybody. I'd have my close friends come over. They could stay in my guest house.
I
I'm
wouldn't
good.
Even be using my name. I would have a different name. Right? Like, I'm just kinda like running around, like buying whatever, like clearly illegal, like, and I'm Al Capone. Right? Like, I mean, I would put myself in the witness protection program.
Yeah. You definitely would. I don't think you
right?
could.
They'd be like,
you'd
I don't
be terrified the whole time.
Shit. I haven't even seen that guy in 3 months.
Oh my God. You'd be a horrible crime boss.
I would. They would never be able to find me, like my own people. It'd be like, I'm not sure if he's still alive.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
All right, everybody. This has been a Through the Abyss production of Al Capone and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And we thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, yes. And if you want to get in touch with us, as always, all of our social media links are on our fabulous new website, www.throughtheabysspodcast.com. Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss Podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spookly stuff.